It's Mike Shope.
It's nothing you did.
It's not you, it's me.
It's not you, it's you, but you didn't cross me.
And the Bulldog.
Why did I choose? Why did I just stay in school?
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
I was just sitting here again feeling jealous of Brad. You know, I don't have to be in every draft. Mike, you don't have to be in every draft. But so much of what I do is online, and it's like tournament stuff, higher stakes, go to Vegas. Even my own league, the League of Shopes and Dreams, if you don't know, this year I missed the draft. It felt like a jumping the shark moment for me with that league. I hate to say it, and I don't intend for it to be, but I had to be, listen to me. I was at my son's lacrosse clinic that day out of town and couldn't go. And, you know, he's going to be a senior in high school. Like, we're in that moment where it's especially important to do as much of that as we can. And, you know, for all the I's to be dotted and the T's to be crossed. And so I missed my league draft, and that did not feel good. So good for Brad. An auction draft in Saratoga. He's been going for 27 years. That's nice. That's a great tradition. With me now on the Wester Hotline is our guy in Denver, Benjamin Albright, KOA Colorado. Ben, you good? I hope we're not putting any sort of extra stress into your life by bugging you today.
No, it's been a fascinating day here for me personally, but I'm glad to be on board with you.
If you want to say anything, go ahead. I mean, it's in this world, maybe it does get back to you, but I don't know. Like, if you want to vent, you certainly should feel free.
I don't even know what to vent. I mean, the parking garage in my apartment complex, it sort of collapsed, and I don't even know what you do with that, really. That's just it's been one of those days.
I guess you just park somewhere else and, you know, wait for security or wait for repairs, I guess. I don't know. Tough one.
Yeah.
I guess the best you can do. So, Benjamin, here we go into 2026. The Bills and Broncos, having met in the playoffs each of the last 2 years, have Broncos fans, yourself, everybody there, kind of settled into a new reality that these guys are like a contender and you have high standards there now?
I think the fan base certainly has. The bar is far higher than it was when Sean Payton got here. The bar is now set at excellence. I think the fans around here are looking at this team as a contender. I think the team feels it's a contender. I think there's been a growth of confidence to the point where, you know, last year they were winning a lot of those games with last second comebacks, and last year they sort of had this mentality that they could hang with anybody. I think they're coming into this year more with a hunter's approach. Like, we can't just hang with anybody, we can beat anybody, and I think that's where they sit right now.
Teams tend to like it when they feel slighted, and maybe the Broncos have a little bit of that with there being the it's just one manifestation of it, perhaps the third choice in the betting markets in the AFC West. Maybe a little bit of, what do we have to do? Okay, Kansas City, I get it, but the Chargers too. That's a little weird for me, given the year Denver just had.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I don't, that has not been a consistent talking point around here, but I do think that's certainly felt. I think that everybody, you know, here in Denver kind of says, well, hey, look, we think we're a contender. We don't care what the betting markets say. Maybe, you know, we're getting better odds to put our own money down on this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think here it's interesting because I think they feel like the biggest threat is the Chargers and not really Kansas City. A lot of people think Kansas City is probably the third team in the division. And so that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out this year. I think the pulse of Denver is one that, maybe Kansas City's time at the top is waning or has passed.
Why do you think that would be, Benjamin, that the Chargers might outrank the Chiefs in Denver's eyes?
I think part of it is, I mean, watching the Chargers the last couple of years, Sean Payton's always struggled against Jim Harbaugh, but, you know, you look, it's been a quality team. When they haven't had a spate of injuries, they've been tough to beat. Now you've added guys that are well-known here in Denver. Adam Gase is on that offensive staff. He was, of course, on the Broncos offensive coordinator when they were record-setting. Mike McDaniel is running the offense. Of course, he's a very familiar name. He's from here. Right. And so I think there's a combination of, you know, adding those two names, the work they did on the offensive line this year, and just seeing how that team played in previous years when they were fully healthy.
Right. Adam Gase, back to that incredible, historic Peyton Manning season, right? He's the 55 touchdowns. He's the quarterback coach of that team, right? Maybe.
Yeah, he was the OC, QB coach. Like those teams back then. He was kind of the architect of that. Now Peyton Manning was running the show against Peyton Manning, but Adam Gase was certainly the guy with the designation.
McDaniel is interesting. I love his story, and that's a guy I root for. I mean, Bills and Dolphins. The Bills continued to kind of own them, and obviously it came apart for the Dolphins. But I get the optimism about him with L.A. It sounds like you might too.
Yeah, I think he's probably one of those guys that's best suited as a coordinator anyway. You know, he's one of those people that's a brainiac. He loves drawing things up and that kind of stuff. His problem down there in Miami with a lot was managing personnel. And, you know, he doesn't have to do as much of that, I think, you know, as the OC with the Chargers. You know, obviously a Shanahan disciple, and he's been through it in the league. Seen it all. He's been around, suffered through, you know, some addiction and rehab issues and all that kind of stuff, and just managed to conquer all that. He's one of those guys that when you talk to him, you kind of can't help but root for him.
Right. Benjamin Albright, my guest. I'm Mike Shope. Bulldog is off today. This is WGR. I hate to keep asking you questions about how you think everybody feels. I go on in different cities, and I get those questions, and I don't want to speak for everybody. You can't. But I am curious for how maybe in your own mind or how you think Denver sort of looks back on the end of last year, winning the Buffalo game in overtime in the playoffs. Then you get the Knicks news right after the game, which was shocking. And, you know, the AFC championship ends up being in a blizzard without your quarterback. I mean, do you throw your hands up a little bit because of that? Is it, I mean, being kind of new back into the playoffs and into the AFC championship game, you know, you never want to lose, but you sort of look at it maybe as growth. What are maybe the right sentiments for the Broncos at the end of last year?
Well, I think there's a feeling here that if Bo had been healthy, they probably beat the Patriots. I don't know if they'd beat the Seahawks, but they'd probably beat the Patriots. I think more.
Hey, Ben, we're kind of losing you here for a minute, so I don't know if you can go back to where you were if you moved like 30 seconds ago, but I lost you in the middle of that answer. Knicks, remember, I do, from what I remember about working that night after the Bills loss with Bulldog here, is the news that just sort of interrupted our post-mortem that Knicks had been injured. Sorry, Ben, hopefully this works better. You were saying...
Yeah, sorry about that. I think there's an optimism that comes out of that. I mean, I think the team is, you know, certainly dejected that they didn't have full strength and Bo to play the Patriots, and obviously, you know, they feel like they could have won that one. You know, but you look at that and you say, okay, well, we got there. And, you know, this is a return. We're bringing the whole band back, basically. I mean, John Frankenmeyer is the only player they're not bringing back. And so I think there's a mentality that, hey, we got there with what we had. Why not us? Why can't we do it again? And so I think there's an optimism from that.
Benjamin, did anybody outside of the locker room know about the Knicks injury before Sean Payton announced it?
Sort of, we all saw Bo like limping there. And so there was sort of this like, oh, he's a little dinged up, but we did not know the extent or severity of it. And no, it did not leak until right before Sean got up there to the podium. The Broncos front office, you know, communications people kind of pulled some of us to the side there and said, hey, he's about to go up there and Bo's going to be done. You need to be in there for that. So.
Yeah, that had to be pretty shocking. I mean, it was. I was just saying for a minute there how incredible that was here. I mean, we're sitting here trying to digest the loss and figure it all out, and then, you know, we get in our ear, by the way, Bo Nix broke his ankle. And wasn't Nix bothered by how that went or what was disclosed eventually?
Yeah, that situation was, there's a lot to that. I'll say this. I mean, Bo probably dropped back too much in that game. Shouldn't have been running, you know, QB power there toward the end. They should have let a running back run it. All kinds of decisions that were involved in that. Later on, afterwards, he sort of took exception to the way Sean Payton got out there and publicly talked about the injury and maybe described it as sort of recurring because he had had an issue with the other ankle back in college. And there was some friction, some definite friction from that. That's long since admitted now, but at the time and the way that was presented, there was definite friction from Bo on that.
How do you feel, Ben, about how Nix is perceived as a quarterback in the league, a top quarterback, the success that he's had? I mean, I think he gets sort of run over a little bit because of either his age or just sort of the way Mahomes, Allen, Jackson, even Burrow sort of established a hierarchy in the conference. And I think May has maybe even cracked that too. Does the question maybe should be, does Knicks, in your opinion, get enough respect?
Yes and no. I mean, I think the national narrative on him is somewhat lacking. I think some of the arguments that that are used against him are somewhat suspect. But the flip side of that, I mean, I think, you know, opposing players respect him. I think it's maybe a media and a fans thing. I mean, you look at this, he led the NFL in dropbacks last year, but didn't clear 4,000 yards. That was a little, you know, a little eye-opening. And so, you know, people look at all the screens and things like that, and they say, okay, well, you know, he doesn't throw the ball deep. Well, that's not true. I mean, he's got a pretty good deep ball, actually, which, you know, you guys saw a couple of those. It's just, you know, the way they were doing things last year when J.K. Dobbins went down and that kind of stuff. And then, you know, the offensive line gets credited as being one of the best offensive lines in football. Well, part of that's because Bo gets rid of the ball so quick and doesn't take sacks, you know, and the sacks are as much a quarterback stat as they are an offensive line stat. So I think it's, there's a little give and take with that. I think sometimes the narratives on him are incorrect, and then sometimes he does get the, you know, the praise he deserves.
Mm-hmm. Seven game-winning drives. I mean, you can't really scoff at that too much. So what have they done to get better? Jaylen Waddle, in my fantasy streets, Benjamin, there's a lot of excitement about Jaylen Waddle. He's a player that, over the course of the summer, has gone up in drafts. I guess the question, well, questions about him can be asked, I suppose. He hasn't always been the most durable guy. But I guess the question I would have is, can he be somebody, is he a clear number one? You know, you still have Sutton, and Denver is famous for just running in and out, a few other guys in and out in their running game and their passing game. What do you think it looks like for Waddle?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't know about number one, but what he brings to the table changes what they do on offense. I mean, he can fly, but more importantly than that, he can gear down, change direction, and pick speed back up. And so that allows him to work the middle of the field. He's going to be the Z receiver. I mean, Sean Payton offense typically has got that X guy who's a, you know, big body slant guy, you know, Michael Thomas back in the day, Marcus Colston. That's what Cortland Sutton will play. And then Waddle will play the other side of that. He'll be the, you know, the Devery Henderson back there, Brandon Cooks, Ted Ginn, those types of guys that are on the backside. It can fly. And when you've got that guy, it changes how you play defense. I mean, it forces defenders to go back to, you know, too high looks a lot, opens up stuff underneath, and it's going to make things better for other guys like Evan Engram, who didn't have the most productive year last year.
That's interesting. So, I mean, Sutton, you see him still being Cortland Sutton going into this year? Like, I mean, he's not old or anything, 30. It's about the time to start asking those questions, but is he likely in your mind to be the player he's been?
I think so. I mean, he's looked like that in camp. Now, the question is this going to be his last year in Denver? The Broncos had previously drafted Pat Bryant, who has looked like an absolute star here in camp. And so I think what you're getting here is probably the last year of Sutton. Sutton knows that. I think he's playing for one more contract somewhere else. And I think you're going to get a player that looks pretty much like the Sutton of old. And, you know, he's going to have a lot of one-on-one attention because people are paying attention to Waddle, just another guy that gets some benefit from that.
How about the running back mix, Benjamin? That's another one with Denver that is really tough to predict, I think, sometimes, at least from the outside. Jonah Coleman seems interesting as a rookie. Dobbins back. RJ Harvey. How do you think it meshes?
Well, Dobbins is the guy until he's, you know, inevitably hurt. I know he made the promise to Denver media, said he pinky promises he's playing all 17 games. He'll buy everybody a beer if he doesn't. I told him I was going to hold him to that. I want my free beer. But, you know, as far as the rest of that goes, I mean, Dobbins is running back one. He's the main guy. After that, RJ Harvey has sort of a pass catching role. If you go back and look at Sean Payton's offense in New Orleans and how he deployed Reggie Bush, that's basically the RJ Harvey role. And then Jonah Coleman is probably the guy to own if you're a fantasy owner if Dobbins goes down, because he'll step into the Dobbins role rather than Harvey just moving up. Harvey will continue his same role, and Coleman, who has looked just phenomenal, will step into that J.K. Dobbins role. So if you were, you know, if you're looking at that thing, it's kind of a RB 1-2-3 with Dobbins, Coleman, Harvey, except that Harvey has sort of carved out a pass catching role as well.
Okay. Hey, no offense to the guy. I respect anybody that plays in this league, and what he's been through physically is, I mean, it's a tremendous effort and story and, you know, perseverance. If he's willing to extend that offer, my hand is up. I mean, there was the year with Ian Rappaport where Rappaport tweeted something about, I think it was Rappaport, somebody on that level, like tweeted something about Dobbins, you know, not being ready maybe for week one. He was still with Baltimore at the time, and he clapped back at that, but the report was correct, it turned out.
Yeah, and he's just super sensitive about that because it's, you know, it's one of those things. He has battled back from a myriad of devastating injuries, frankly, and credit to him for being able to battle back from that. But you know, monikers stick, and they stick for a reason. And so I think that's kind of where he's at right now, is he's trying to put that positivity back in the universe, but there's quite a bit of skepticism.
I want to get to Jim Leonard, but while we're on offense, Davis Webb, and the Bills might have dabbled in that idea too when they were looking for a replacement for Sean McDermott. He ends up what, getting promoted in Denver? Is he the play caller now, or what exactly?
Yeah, and there's some mythology out there that Sean Payton has identified him and groomed him, and this was engineered by Bo and Greg Penner, the owner, and he's the play caller now, and you can see it, that some of the archaic aspects of Sean Payton's offense have been updated with Davis Webber on the show. There's more motion, there's more tempo, they break the huddle much quicker, and so those are things I think that are going to really matter once they get to playing this season. So he's the play caller, he's the offensive coordinator. The question is how long he's going to be here before somebody snaps him up and makes him a head coach.
Pretty good career arc so far, being only 31 and in that spot, right? At least.
Oh yeah. He's a rising star. He's a young guy, but he's a rising star.
Jim Leonard takes over the Bills defense. What were your interactions with him like?
Oh, they were great. Jim was more than just, I mean, he was listed as the secondary coach, the DB's coach, that kind of thing, but he was much more involved than that. Kind of a lieutenant as the defensive coordinator. Great guy to be around, loves football, knows football. He was instrumental in helping to identify some draft picks too. When he was back there at Illinois, the Broncos drafted two or three players from Illinois from when he was there, including Miles Scott this past year, a converted receiver who's a safety now that Leonard, basically taught him the ropes as a defender. So very instrumental, great coach. That was one of those things that honestly, a lot of people here expected Vance Joseph to maybe get a head coaching job this offseason and Jim Leonard to be the DC here. So, high marks for him all the way around here.
Big changes coming to the Bills defense underway after, 9 years with Sean McDermott, kind of doing it one way, and big adjustment transition time here for the Bills. A few minutes left with Benjamin Albright. Ben, what about the AFC overall here? We talked about the AFC West a little bit, and you have three contenders there. Man, it's tough for me to try to parse the rest of it. You've got at least two worthy, two teams in each division at least where you can talk seriously about them winning big, I think. I'd include the Bengals, Jacksonville and Houston in the South. It's going to be fun this year after a while of that. Last year was its own transition in the AFC where you had, four teams had won the respective divisions 2 years in a row before last year, and then none of them did. So it could get pretty wild.
Yeah, it could. And that's that parody that we love in the NFL, right? The way the pendulum swings and nobody has that unless you're the Tom Brady Patriots. Nobody has that lock on it forever. So it's good. I think it's good for the league. I think it's good for everybody. And you see some teams on the rise that have been more abundant over the years. I mean, Jacksonville being good all of a sudden was kind of fun. That kind of thing. You've got Houston. If they figure the quarterback situation out, that defense is lethal. You mentioned Cincinnati. They could pour the points on. The question is, can they field a defense? And that, they went out and got Dexter Lawrence, but we don't know. Baltimore with new coaching staff, what's that going to look like without Harbaugh there? There's a lot of questions, but I think it's a lot of fun questions. I don't think it's a lot of, it's a lot of a treachery. I think this is one of those things where you've got good teams that have question marks, and I think it's a pretty fun playing field.
That Denver schedule, you got the NFC West this year. I love it when it's West versus West. They're such great matchups and a lot of night games right away at Kansas City Monday night in week one. The Bills have their version of this. The Bills get the NFC North. The Bills have five games, well, of course they would, against the NFC, and they're all at night. And they all look like, really good matchups on paper. And Denver's schedule is much the same, including the Bills in Denver on Christmas Day.
Yeah, that's going to be, first of all, that's going to be a fun one to work. But, it is. You mentioned the West versus West thing. And, the NFC West is kind of like the AFC West, where you got three teams that are contenders and one team that's the goofy stepchild. And, the Arizona Cardinals and the Raiders for the divisions respectively. But, yeah, it's going to be tough. And the first, 6-8 weeks that Denver plays, it's a brutal schedule before it gets kind of easy and then, starts to tighten back up there around Christmas. So if the Broncos can weather that storm early, that middle of that schedule, very favorable for them. And then, it sets up beautifully heading on into the late season of playoffs.
very similar to the Bills schedule. And then last thing for you, Benjamin, you get, as it happens, Denver gets Buffalo and New England back-to-back late in the season, just like last year in the playoffs, the Bills out there and then the Patriots in the AFC Championship. How do you compare those two teams?
Well, I mean, the Bills are, you know, going through that transition. You're going to be changing defensive styles. You know, you went from, you know, zone defense under McDermott to an attacking defense under Jim Leonard. It's going to be a lot more one high. You know, everybody, you got the threat of Josh Allen. That's going to be interesting. And, we hear reports about how him and DJ Moore look together and all that. As far as the Patriots go, I mean, they're a good football team, but it's, you know, it feels like they're a team that's more on the rise than established like Buffalo. You know, you got the young guy in Drake May. You got Vrabel. We have yet to see with all the stuff that went on with him this summer how that looks, how that team stays together this season. So, you know, good defense, but another team that maybe, you know, you're kind of waiting to see these pieces they brought in, how they fit.
Benjamin, thank you. Good luck with that parking garage. Hopefully your car wasn't in it.
Yeah, it wasn't. Thank goodness.
That's a break. Thanks for your time. Enjoy the season.
All right, take care.
Benjamin Albright out in Denver, KOA, Colorado. Bills and Broncos, Christmas Day. One of three games on Christmas. Because we have to have games on Christmas. We already had NBA games. That wasn't enough. We have to have NFL games on Christmas. Let's get one of these joint practices played in Europe. I mean, is that inevitable? That's Roger Goodell's word, right? Inevitable that there'll be a full-time team in Europe? I don't know. It's not that hard to comprehend. Everything's about money, and somebody's going to step up, and something I could have asked Ben about, because he's tweeted about it, what that is going to look like. My guess would be, and you know, maybe I haven't done enough research to make a more educated guess, my guess would be Mexico. Mexico City. We've had plenty of games there. Arizona, the Texas teams, the California teams, all relatively accessible. I mean, it's a long trip. Maybe even I should compare that with London, because I'm not sure it's really that much different. But I could see either of those being the first or the breakthrough where there's a franchise there full time. And I would guess that we're not moving anybody. So do they add one team only? Is it two? Is it London and Mexico City? And those are just new NFL franchises? I would think, maybe just a guess, that the NFL would expand internationally before it expands domestically. That there would be teams in Europe or South America or Mexico before there's another team in, I don't know, where would it be? Would Toronto be in that conversation too? I mean, so big, so close. Imagine a Bills versus Toronto rivalry in a decade or two in the NFL. But it's going to happen. Does it have to be the worst thing ever? No, it's just sort of how these things go. Growth, money, that's going to be what dictates. The Broncos, are they a rival now? 2 years in a row in the playoffs? I mean, how many would it take for you to care a lot about the Denver Broncos as a team to beat or a team in the Bills' hair, so to speak? 803-0550 for your calls. Would love to talk about James Cook, DJ Moore, Dalton Kincaid, the kind of the usual suspects when we have these topics on our show. We've got Joe Brady in his first year and the changes on defense. Everything is ramping up to week one in Houston coming up September 13th. I'm Mike Shope. Bulldog is off today. Lines are open for your calls. Sal coming up at 5 with a report from Cleveland. This is WGR.
He was listed as the, you know, the secondary coach, the DB's coach, that kind of thing. But he was much more involved than that, you know, kind of a lieutenant as the defensive coordinator. Great guy to be around, loves football, you know, knows football. He was instrumental in helping to identify some draft picks, too. When he was back there at Illinois, the Broncos drafted two or three players from Illinois from when he was there, including Miles Scott this past year, a converted receiver who's a safety now that Leonard, you know, basically taught him the ropes as a defender. So very instrumental, great coach. That was one of those things that, honestly, a lot of people here expected Vance Joseph to maybe get a head coaching job this offseason and Jim Leonard to be the DC here. So, you know, high marks for him all the way around here.
Benjamin Albright, just on with me, Mike Shope, talking about Jim Leonard. $500,000 fines to the Cowboys and Saints for fighting at their joint practices. Can the NFL just announce any number? Is it that rich where, guys, what do you think we should ding them for? Like, what sounds good? How much, what are we going to do with this money? What do we want? Can they just do that unilaterally? How about $500,000? All right. There you go. $500,000 fines for fighting. Probably there are some parameters, but I didn't know you would get fined for that. And here comes, I mean, the teams probably should have. Here comes the NFL. We want $500,000 from each of you for whatever happened in those practices. I mean, for that amount of money, hopefully it was pretty bad. Let's go to James here. Hi, James.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm just curious about James Cook and Josh Allen's use on the goal line. First of all, from, you know, perspective of health for Josh, you know, getting a year older, are we going to start protecting him a little bit more, stop, you know, having him run through multiple defensive guys, you know, just to try and get in there? But also from a fantasy perspective, is that do we see that really possibly juicing up James Cook's numbers? You know, causing us to fade Allen a little bit more. Just wanted to get your perspective on it and see what you thought, what people are seeing in practices so far.
Yeah, thanks, James. I mean, for me, this is not only a reasonable question, but it's one that I've been asking for years, and I have never yet I've yet to see the Bills do that, where they rein in Allen or they basically have Cook, as I kind of thought the whole time would be the case, where he would kind of, his upside in terms of touchdowns would be capped because of Allen. What do the Bills go and do? They broke records. And you've got both guys rushing for double-digit touchdowns both years. And so it gets tiring betting against it. But the day will come. And I think, starting with Cook, James, it's reasonable to think this year is when we see it. The talk about him has been pretty much one direction, which is they want to throw the ball to him more. They have a new coordinator in Pete Carmichael, who was famous for having that be a big part of their offense when he was in New Orleans. So you might either just sort of circumstantially go there or even maybe just know it. But everybody seems to be assuming it. But I think that would have to mean fewer touches for Cook as a rusher. And that would have to extend to inside the 5 yard line or inside the 10. I mean, he's got the breakaway ability. Many of his touchdowns have come from distance, and that doesn't have to go away. But there, in terms of fantasy, since you asked, not the, I can just sort of bring that up on my own. James Cook is about pick 9 in the first round. And you've got Jonathan Taylor, you've got Christian McCaffrey, you've got Omarion Hampton, Kenneth Walker, Chase Brown, Ashton Jeanty, Saquon Barkley. That's 8. I might have even missed one. And they all go from about the middle of the first round to the middle of the second. And I think the bet on Cook at that price is basically a bet on his repeating last year overall, even if that does come with more receptions but fewer touchdowns on the ground. And I don't like betting guys at their ceiling. I can't imagine. Look, I'm on the record with James Cook for a couple years being just sort of like, yeah, okay, he's fine. So don't necessarily consider me like a great source on this, but I don't want to bet guys at their ceiling, you know? And I think that's what that is with Cook. I think, you know, you're talking about elite producers all over, but I think Jeanty, Chase Brown, Walker, for sure, are three guys in that group where they could have, or even Jeanty and Walker, could or should have bigger years than they've had before. Like, I think that's what I mean. I think Cook, you know, his ceiling is what we got already. That could happen again. Last year, I would have said the same thing, okay? I would have said the same thing. Allen's a year older. Come on, he's not going to. He ran so pure on touchdowns, like 200 carries and 16 touchdowns. That's nuts. That's not going to happen again. It really didn't. But instead, he led the league in rushing yards on 100 more carries and had enough touchdown production to rate. I'm not sure I'm answering your question. I don't love picking Cook. A lot of my friends do. I've seen him go as high as 105, 106 in big drafts. So I'm just very stubborn. I'm stubborn on this player. I'm stubborn on Derrick Henry. I'm stubborn on certain guys where I think we've already seen the peak. And with as dangerous as the position is with injuries and just volatility within a team, I don't really want to do it. Allen, it for his part, is on his own tier now. That's never even really happened. He went from, I mean, he's been the QB1 in fantasy like 4 or 5 years in a row or almost. So he went from, huh, maybe he should be the QB1 to, okay, he's right at it to now where there is like three rounds of separation between Allen and the next guy, whether that's Lamar Jackson or Drake May. That tends to be sometimes Burrow if it's the Chase or Higgins owner. Like that's the list. And I mean, he's much tougher to bet against as a player. If I were betting prop numbers, you wouldn't need to twist my arm to get me to the overs on Josh Allen. That does kind of feel like where this year is headed with the tougher schedule and maybe with DJ Moore. So that I'm fine with. I just don't really want to draft him because I don't want to draft a quarterback that early. So I've got reasons against both of those guys, but in terms of Cook, I'm certainly not sure that I'm right. I've been wrong before on him. And in terms of Allen, it's more just a positional analysis. Thanks, James. Good luck. Here's Tony next. Hi, Tony.
Hey, Mike. I only caught the tail end with your last guest with Albright. So If this came up, my apologies. But hearing a little bit of Bronco talk makes me think about a comparison in the AFC that I just think is just like the Spider-Man meme. It's the Patriots for me. And I know the two might not always be compared a lot because they're not competing for a division, but you know, they both have the ascending quarterback, the new May obviously being a notch above, the new alpha in the receiver room, the second round running backs or maybe from last year that are sitting behind questionable veteran RB1s for their team.
Yep.
And then the foundation on defense and good coaching, man. I mean, honestly, that Bronco team is every bit as scary as the Patriots and can do every bit, the damage to their division that, that has been won elsewhere not last year, notwithstanding. But, you know, they can knock off the Chiefs in the same way that the Patriots could knock off the Bills for a second year in a row and kind of take claim as the team to beat in their division.
Yeah, that's really good, which comes to me as no surprise. I think those are all good points. And by the way, to your last point, if it happens, then eventually we're going to have to come over and recognize that. These conversations this year for me have been, all right, you know, as recently as yesterday on the show, do we want to make the adjustment to a new reality in the conference where the Broncos, the Patriots, the Jaguars, I guess that's the list, as teams that were ascendant or are, do we want to make the adjustment to like inviting those into the room as the elite in the conference? If you do that and you let Buffalo, Kansas City, Baltimore, Cincinnati, Houston even stick around, I mean, now you have half the conference in the room. Now half the AFC is in this sort of contender status. It does not include the Chargers, who might belong there, or the Steelers, who only win that division. And now you're at 10, and even Indianapolis deserves some respect. I think you have, this has been interesting through the power rankings we do, where you have 7 or 8 teams that at the top of the conference that you can reasonably put in any order. Who's the 8th best team in the AFC? We do this every Tuesday. Who's the 8th best team in the AFC? You got to pick somebody. And who's the best? It's just really easy to mix those up. And you could draw them out of a hat, and I think it could make sense, the order. 1 week we're putting New England first or second. The next we're putting them 6th. I think maybe just because we're in a mood about them. And then you have these teams like the Chargers might belong actually in that first group. Then you have the Colts and the Steelers and who else? I mean, that are sort of iffy. And then you have the Jets, Dolphins, Browns, Raiders and Titans, who are nobody's idea of good. Tennessee, at least, might be conceivable. I know Sam Paniadovich will be on tomorrow, has said that he likes them at the price in the AFC South. But, man, they're a long way behind the others. So the story for the Bills' purposes is not how good the Titans are. It's how good these other five or seven teams around them are. And the Bills are going to see all of them. They're not going to see Cincinnati, I guess, or Jacksonville. But you're playing Denver, you're playing the Chargers, you're playing the Chiefs, you're playing the Ravens, you're playing New England twice, you're playing Houston week one. That's seven of your games. It's going to be hot. It's going to be really interesting to see that play out. I mean, it always is for different reasons. I'll say this. There are years, the last few years, a lot of my thinking about the season has been, well, they'll make it, and then what? And it's about the draw, the bye, ideally, and the bounces once we get there. I'm not really, for two reasons, I'm not kind of thinking that way this year. One is that the stadium is brand new, and the stadium is a big story for the fans, for the team even. Like, that's kind of what I'm always distracted about is, okay, so what is it like in there, you know, and just how much of an adjustment that is. But then it's also that I don't see a cakewalk, you know, and a couple of these seasons have been that. Even with New England passing them last year, they were still never really under any duress to get in. It was just going to be about trying to run New England down, which they ultimately could not do. Thanks, Tony. I'm Mike Shope at 803-0550. Sal, in less than 20 minutes from Cleveland, this is WGR.